Ladies and gentlemen,
this DJ Shab, the hottest DJ in the South right now, and you are now tuned in to Tia versus Fancy Cash Podcast. And I'm telling you, it's about to go down.
Welcome back to another episode of the I Am The Prize Podcast. So today I have a special guest joining me to talk about creating your own table. And she's someone that's super, super special to me. And I feel like, you know what, Tia, it's time to stop being so territorial and share her with the rest of the world so she can bless y'all the way that she blesses me. So I'm going to let her introduce herself.
Thank you so much for having me, Tia, and it is a blessing to be on this journey with you as your mentor. I am Lakeisha Womack. I am a serial entrepreneur, so I am the lead consultant with Womack Consulting Group, where we help people develop plans to fulfill their dreams. So whether it's a business plan, marketing plan, strategic plan, we've got you to help you live out loud. I'm also the owner of a digital media agency where we help people with self-publishing, websites, brand strategy. I'm an ordained minister, so I have a online community, Rethinking Church Strategies, where we work with faith-based leaders to rethink how they engage their congregations and communities. And then somewhere around there, I found the time to write 20 books. And so I'm really excited about those books, and they're all available on Amazon. So thank you so much, Tia, for having me on today.
Yes. You know what? I think I'm just smiling from ear to ear right now, because you remember that saying, jack of all trades or master. What is it? What's the saying?
It's like a jack of all trades is a master of none.
Right. And they used to really push that on us back in the day. So to be aligned with women who are like multi-passionate and who thrive in every area of anything that they feel like they're being called to do just means so much to me, because for a while I used to feel so guilty and so bad about doing so many different things, feeling like, oh, I'm confusing my audience or I'm exhausting my supporters. And I always tell this story, like I talked to my mentor about it one time, how I felt like, you know, I was doing too many things at one time and I didn't want people to get tired of supporting me. And she told me, you know what, Tia, that's a poor mindset to have. Like, you know, everybody's not going to read your book. Everybody's not going to listen to your podcast. Everybody's not going to attend Manifesting Over Mimosas in December. But when you diversify the way that you serve, you're allowing people the opportunity to get to know you through different lenses and in different angles. And okay. Ever since then, the game changed for me.
Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, it's really sad that we make people feel like they have to choose one thing. I think you do need to choose, like, you know, maybe I say like 3 to 5 things that you're going to focus on and really build a support team to help you execute those visions. But it's hard because, as your mentor said, like, everybody's not going to read the book. Everybody's not going to listen to the podcast. So how do you create multiple entryways for people to be able to get to know what you have to offer and then to be able to support you? And so for me, it's like, you know, I have a podcast also that's free, so people can get access to information. I have books. They're anywhere from like $10 to $25. So that's a way to access information. Then you can do a strategy session with me, which is another fee. Or you can do, you know, more one-on-one, like long-term consulting, which is another fee. So it's almost like you're creating a funnel by having those different opportunities. So the more people want to invest, the closer they get to you. But then you're also given like those free ways that people can become a part of your network.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And once I learned that, when I tell you I've been pulling the trigger on each and every idea that I have been sitting on for years, you know, just out of fear. Like, my biggest concern, it wasn't how can I afford this? It wasn't would people support me? It was really like, would people get tired of supporting me? That was one of my limiting beliefs that I had placed on myself. Mm-hmm. And it was me allowing myself to tell me no before anybody else in the world can. Right. So yeah. Now one of my affirmations is like, well, who am I to tell myself no?
Right. If you tell yourself no, like, you've already lost the game. And I think that, you know, that's so powerful, because a lot of times, like, we are our own worst enemy, and we try to make it seem like, oh, you know, the man or the person or the woman doesn't want me to succeed. But it's like, but if you want to be successful, you're going to do everything it takes to make yourself successful. But a lot of times we have to ask ourselves, like, do I really want this? Do I want it bad enough to push past the no, to push past people who might be giving me objections to get to the people who do want to support me.
Right. And so you just made a great point talking about getting past objections and getting past, you know, being told no. And, you know, I don't know if I mentioned it in the beginning, but this podcast episode is about creating your own table. And I want to talk about being rejected. Like, I want you to give us, you know, like, your thoughts or feelings about being rejected, applying for a job, applying to be, you know, a part of a fellowship or organization or a cohort, or, you know, trying out for a team or what, or trying out for a role and not getting that role and not letting that no defeat you. Because I'm a person that I don't take no for an answer.
Well, I'll tell you, I was doing a radio interview once, and the person who was interviewing me, I had tried to have an event and the event did not go well. And she said, what did it feel like to fail? And I was like, and I had to stop for a minute because I was like, I don't feel like I failed. Like, it didn't go the way I wanted it to go, but I learned from it. And I think that too often we center ourselves in what didn't work in a situation instead of saying, all right, this didn't work, but what can I learn from it so that I can be better next time? And I'm a huge proponent of like, shoot your shot. Like, for every fellowship that you apply for, you're not going to get it, but what did you learn through that application process? Because most of those applications are so detailed that you're having to think about things about your business that you might not have thought about before. Like, if you go in for an interview and they're asking you questions and you might not get the job, but what did you learn from the questions that they asked you so the next time you go into an interview, you're more prepared? So I think that too often we focus on the negatives in life, like the glass is half empty, instead of looking at, all right, my glass is half full, because from that experience, whether I got the thing or not, I learned something that's going to help me for the next time. So every situation I go into, I see it as a win because I learned something from it. I don't just go through situations and it's like, oh, well, that didn't work. It's like, oh, well, like that didn't work. But what did I learn so that I can either make it work next time or take what I learned from that experience and charge somebody else so that they don't have to suffer an L for it?
Exactly. And I think another thing is like just the way that you view taking losses. Like, it's okay to be disappointed. Yeah. I'm gonna say it one more time, because I think when people hear, you know, women with certain type of like high value women or super professional, super successful women, they hear us talk about, you know, being disappointed and taking L's, they think like we just brushing it off and you know, somebody handing us another opportunity. No. It is okay to be disappointed. We are human. It's okay to feel like you deserve a certain role or a certain title or a certain position and you didn't get it. It's okay to be mad about it. However, you cannot sit in that disappointment.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think it's also important to understand that, like, it's okay to walk away from things, because sometimes I've started projects and it didn't work out. And instead of me continuing to push, like, I have to do a critical evaluation. Like, is this something my audience really wants? And just because I wanted to do it, if the audience doesn't want it, like, don't keep pushing and pushing and pushing if you see that it's not working. But sometimes we get so caught up in an idea or a project that it's like, no, I'm going to keep pushing and pushing. And so we end up disappointing ourselves because we don't know how to let go. Like, to get to the place where I am, there are so many ideas that did not work that I was like, yes, like, this is it. And I put it out and people were like, nah. And it's like, okay, let me take that back and try something different. So you have to try different things to see what is going to work for my audience, what feels good for me, what's going to make me money. Because some people are out here doing stuff and people are like, yeah, I want it, but I don't want to pay for it. So it's like, is this something that you can continue to do with people not paying for it? Do you have another way to generate revenue? So sometimes you just got to be real honest with yourself about what you're working on, because sometimes you feel like you're winning, but you're really losing. Because if your business is, say, making $25,000 a month, but it's costing you $30,000 a month, you may feel like you're winning because you have a business, but you're losing money and you're going into debt. So we have to be real about what's a win and what's a loss. And some of the things we see as losses are really wins because they're helping us get closer to our purpose.
Right. And so I tell a lot of people, I'm a feelings person. If something does not feel good, I want no parts of it. Because you can always, one, like Miss Lakeisha was saying, when you have an idea and you stick to that idea and you sold on it feeling like, oh, this is the money-making idea, sometimes you giving your audience what you want them to have and not what they want. Yeah. So then when they don't respond to us in the way that we want them to respond and we don't have that Beyonce effect where we sell them out in 24 hours and our websites are crashing from all this traffic, we feel defeated. When literally, if you have 9-to-5 experience, I want you to think about something. A lot of people are so sick of their 9-to-5s. And they want to be an entrepreneur full time. They want to pursue it. Y'all forget to look at that 9-to-5 and take the strategy from the 9-to-5 and implement it into your business that you have. So when something doesn't work out in corporate America, they're not shutting down the business. Bank of America or ViStar Credit Union is not saying, oh, well, this sale didn't work, or we didn't meet our goal for the month, so we just gonna close down our business. We're gonna stop posting on Instagram. We're gonna stop talking to our audience. No, that's when they start upping up their surveys, trying to figure out what is it that customers really, really need. And then they're gonna go back to the drawing board with their team to take a different approach. It's all in the approach. The business idea might not be what's not working. It might be your approach to that idea. Yes. So you have to go back to the drawing board and look for a different approach to that.
Oh yeah. And then you also have to be like data driven. Like you have to look at your numbers. And I find that a lot of business women are, like you said, like very emotional driven. So it's like, what feels good, or what do I think about this? But at the end of the day, like you got to be able to sit down with your numbers and say, like, all right, like what makes sense? Like, is the audience growing? Is the revenue growing? Like, is there potential in the market for this new idea? And too often we're not strategic in our planning. And so when the emotion is driving the decisions, and then other people don't feel that emotion because you didn't do the research behind the scenes, then it can be like, oh man, like people don't like me. And it's like you said, it's not that people don't like you, but what approach did you take? Did you market to the right audience for the thing that you're trying to do? And so we just have to be, you know, more intentional and be more business minded than just trying to look like money, because that's what I find a lot of people, like they want to look like success, but then on the back end, they're like bleeding resources.
Exactly. So let's talk about, now we're talking about creating your own table, and I just want to shift the conversation a little bit, because I know people are waiting for us to get to the nitty gritty and talk about this. But when it comes to creating your own table, just as a woman in business, and not even in business, but in life in general, dealing with the rejection and not sitting in that rejection and just having the grit, the tenacity, the resilience to say, hey, like, okay, this, I wasn't accepted into this circle. Mm-hmm. Let me find my own tribe. Let me find a tribe that's going to accept me. People, you know, who were also rejected from some of the same circles and some of the same tables that I wanted to sit at, and let us build up our own group of people who can thrive in this environment that we're creating. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Oh, most definitely. And I think, you know, you said it right there. A lot of times we fight so hard to be in spaces that don't want us and don't affirm us. And that's always like so confusing to me, because I'm like, if they don't want you, there's probably a whole group of people just like you that they don't want. So instead of like trying to beat down somebody else's door for a seat at their table, like, why not create your own table? Why not create your own space? Because there are more people like you who need that space. And I think that too often we've been conditioned to believe that we have to be a part of someone else's vision, instead of saying, hey, why not go build that vision, but for other people who need this type of space? And you'll find that there are more people like you than you could have ever imagined. And I'm sure with you building out this podcast, that's probably one of the things that you've seen, is like the approach that you take to this work is something that other people are not doing. So how do you have conversations about these real topics that other people want to dance around, but people want to know the nitty gritty? Like, how do I deal with rejection? I'll tell you how I deal with rejection. I cry a little bit on the inside. I might make me a ghetto sangria and sit on my sofa and watch a couple hours of Law and Order. And then I get up the next morning and I'm like, all right, like, what's next? Like, what do I do next? Like, I have my whole little pity party. I'm texting my girlfriends about how sad I am, but I don't live in that moment. And I think that we have to, one, be authentic, that we have feelings, that stuff hurts us, that stuff makes us sad. You're not a robot. You're not, you know, an animatronic where you can just go through and never feel anything. Like, yeah, you have a great idea and you think people are going to like it and they don't like it. You go to a networking event and you think you're going to make connections and nobody wants to talk to you. It hurts. Like, it makes you sad. But don't live in that sadness. And then take a lesson from that. Like, all right, so what did I learn? These people over here don't want to network with me. Let me host my own networking event.
Exactly.
This idea didn't work. All right, let me figure out what didn't work and let me try something different.
Right. So, and you know, you just said something about like networking and not feeling like people want to connect with you. It's okay to go to an event and, like I said, I'm really big on feelings. So it's okay to go to an event and you know, get what you're going to get out of it. That doesn't mean discount the event as and take it away from the organizer like it was a terrible event. It just wasn't the space for you. So that's a little bit of the reason why I created Manifesting Over Mimosas, because I would go to networking events and I always believed in networking up. Yeah. You know, like networking and with people that are like in a higher space than I am. But I realized that I was uncomfortable. I was still uncomfortable in those spaces, and I can still network up, but I want to network with people with similar characteristics to me, because I just had the wrong idea of networking up. And that was networking with women, you know, with the pantyhose and the pearls and the St. John suits. And I'm thinking, because they had these big fancy titles, that's who I need to be connecting with. When it's like, no, it's people just like me who look like me, act like me, with just as much value and just as much influence and just as much power. And I can get much more from those relationships than I could trying to network with like snooty women who probably didn't even accept me because of my red hair and my long, you know, colorful nails, because I didn't feel a look, like I didn't fit the mold. And see me, I'm not wearing a mask, y'all. Like, what you see is what you get. The way I'm talking now is how I talk in big meetings. And I only want to be surrounded by people who can accept me for who I am and the value that I have to bring to the table, versus trying to take Tia with the red locks and saying, hey, you need to go get you a layered wrap, put on you some pearls, put on you a what it is, what's the suits out of Ross that I love so much, a Calvin Klein suit.
I can't imagine seeing you like that. Like, I would be like, yo, like, what happened? Like, you okay? Like, what's going on?
Look, I would be sick. I would probably be throwing up in the parking lot, because wearing a mask for me is just so hard and it's so uncomfortable. And I would probably just run out of the meeting like, hey, this don't feel good. And I probably would not even, I would be stumbling over my words, trying to use big words, trying to, you know, fit in and be accepted. And whole time, what I have learned is these women, they be wearing masks they damn self. I'm sorry to cuss, but they be wearing masks they self. And it's like they try to encourage this type of look on certain people to feel like that's the look for success. But what does success really look like? Like, what's the look, Ms. Lakeisha?
Listen, success looks like commas in your bank account. That's what success looks like. And you can't see that, but it does like drive a certain level of confidence. And I think that, you know, there's a couple of things that came to mind when you were talking. Is one, you know, the reason why, you know, these ladies have this look is because when you think about everything that we went through coming out of enslavement and Jim Crow, like there was a respectability that people were trying to present, so that, you know, they wouldn't be categorized as, you know, some of the more reckless people that, you know, they had identified in our society. So people put on the pantyhose and the hats and the white gloves so that they can go downtown shopping at Ross or what have you. But what they haven't realized is like that kind of age is over or it's ending. And people are looking for more authentic people because they recognize that those people who had on the mask, like they didn't have it all together. They just recognized they had to put that on so that they wouldn't get beaten in the streets. So we have to recognize that there was a reason that they did that, but that reason wasn't necessarily serving them. And then I think the other thing, like when you start talking about, you know, networking, everybody should be looking at networking from three different angles. So I call it like the triple layer networking. Like you should be networking up. So you should always be in rooms where there's somebody that can teach you something. So even when you go in those rooms, you might not have a lot to contribute, but you should have your notebook or your notes on your phone where you're learning something. And then you should also go into your second layer, which is networking with your peers, networking with people who are like you, because you can share with them and then they can also share with you. So there's more of an exchange of information. And then your third layer is you're networking with the people that you serve or the people that you work with. And that's when you walk into the room and you are the expert in the room. So a lot of times when we go to networking events, we're not analyzing what space am I walking into this room? Am I walking in to learn? Am I walking in to exchange? Or am I walking in to be an expert? So you can get yourself disappointed if you walking in trying to be the expert when you really should be in that space to learn.
Right. Being a student. Absolutely.
Exactly.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you know when it's time to create your own table? Like after, and I know there's, it's all, you know, it's all, what's the word? It's all subjective. I think that's the right word. We're going to pull out our dictionary, ladies and gentlemen, to figure out if I use it in the right context. But how do you know that it's the right time to create your own table? Like after how many bad incidents you have with this group of women or people? Mm-hmm. How many times do you get rejected? Do you say, okay, it's time for me to build my own table? Like, what do you think? In your experience, what was like the... this was the last straw. I'm fed up. Let me go create my own space.
So that's kind of how Rethinking Church Strategies, my social impact community, was created, because I was trying to affect change within my church denomination. And it's just like people were not really receptive to what I was trying to share. And so I recognized that, like, if this group doesn't want what I'm giving, could there be another group of people who want it? And so I think that one of the things you have to recognize is, like, once you reach the point where you're like, I don't want to try anymore, then that's when it's time for you to start thinking about creating your own table. And then to decide to create your own table, you got to kind of go out there and see, like, well, is there anyone else who wants to come sit at my table? So that might be polling your social network or polling the people who are in your community. Like, hey, you know, have you guys had a similar experience? Like, what would you think about, you know, like us doing this together? And so if you can get, you know, 5 or 10 people that are like, yeah, like I feel the same way and I would be willing to support you. And I think we also have to understand what support means, because a lot of times we think when people say I'll support you, that means like they're going to be 100% in. And most of the time they're not, because it's your vision and it's your table and it's your dream. So it's you that's going to be sitting at the head of that table, and you might have a rotating group of people who come in and out of the room, but your job in creating a table and is to make sure that the table is available for people who want to come and sit at it, not for you to hold people hostage and be like, well, you said you're going to support, so you got to be here all the time. Like, I recognize that people have their own projects that they're working on and their own interests. So my job in creating a table is to create space for them when they want to come and be in space. And so you just have to kind of do like your due diligence, see who else has the same problem that you have, who else wants to come sit at this table, and then recognize that you're not shackling people to the table. And then the more you do it, the more you show consistency, the more you'll find that there are people who want to be consistent with you. But that doesn't come right off the bat. And a lot of people give up on creating their table too soon because they don't get that 100% support from their family and friends, when that might not be the table that they want to sit at. They might come a couple of times to support you, but that's not their thing. So you got to do the work to figure out, whose thing is this? Who wants to be at this table? Who can benefit from this table? Who can, and going back to that triple layer network, you know, who can I bring in as experts to be at this table? Who can I bring in to exchange ideas at this table? Who can I bring in to teach something at this table? So surrounding yourself with a well-rounded mix of people will also help your space to be successful.
Right. And you made an amazing point about shackling people down to the table. And something that I've learned as an entrepreneur is that attitude of gratitude takes you so far away. Yeah. So instead of being disappointed that people are no longer sitting at the table that you built, I think being happy for them that you gave them the space to grow, yeah, and the opportunity to learn from you and, you know, be be valued and be heard, I think that goes further than saying, hey, this person is up under my wing for the rest of their life and I'm crippling them and enabling them and they can't move unless I move with them.
Hey.
I find the most joy out of knowing, like, my success is contributed to how many people became successful up under me.
Right.
Like, that makes me feel like I am one of the most accomplished millennial businesswomen in my community, because I know that I played a role in so many people's success simply by creating a table. And that table has been through my book. I created a table through the podcast, and people are, they come on, they speak, they get opportunities, or they listen, and now they're bold enough to go after opportunities. Or through Manifest No Mimosas, they come in a room, they've never networked before, they've never spoken on a stage before, or they've never, you know, been to an event before, and they either get out of their shell or different opportunities are, you know, fall in their lap after just one day. So that's my idea of creating a table for other women to thrive.
Exactly, exactly. And I think, you know, you can even see in like each of those instances, like, you know, with the Mimosas event, like, that's an opportunity for an exchange of ideas. With your book, like, you're positioning yourself as an expert. And then with the podcast, you're looking at how do I serve my community? So you're developing like that triple layer network through all the things that you're doing. And so it allows you, again, to reach different people.
Right. Right. Especially, and I'm reaching them at the different levels of their life, because I know some people will never show up to an event because they don't feel like they're ready, but they might listen to a podcast to build up their courage.
Yep.
They might read the book to be inspired to own who they are, to come out of their shell. So, and I just do what works for me when it comes to grabbing my audience attention and keeping them. But I always give my audience space to grow and room to grow. And I think, like, that's my winning strategy. Like, it's not a you stay up under me forever. It's like, no. Hey, I'm just going to give you... I'm not holding my blueprint hostage like the Krabby Patty formula. Like, I'm sharing it with you, and how you implement it in your own life and in your own business is up to you.
Exactly. Exactly. Because we're not slave owners, right? Like, we're not trying to own people. Like, and I think that, you know, that's the mindset that we have to get out of, is like feeling like we own people, or people like owe us something. Like, if we're truly doing this as servant leaders, our job is to serve the people that we lead. And we want to serve them so that as we teach them, they can go and teach other people, which is the principle of discipleship. Like, everything that I teach you is not just so that you can hold on to it, but I want you to go out and spread that message to other people. And that's how we see like communities change, and we see exponential growth, when it's not like I'm going to hold on to this knowledge, but it's like, no, I want everybody to have the knowledge. I want all of us to be better. Like, at some point, I want all of us to be on the yacht, like paying our own part of the fee. Like, I don't want to have to always like pay for everybody. I want us all to grow and prosper so that we can do these things together. But when you don't share that knowledge, then you find that you're always the one that's leading and always the one that's having to be the person, when the goal should be, I want all of us to be the person in our own spheres. And then we come together and celebrate that.
Right. Absolutely. It's like, I don't want to be the only one evolving and growing and waking up and getting all these opportunities. I want my audience to evolve with me. Yeah. And I also want my audience to know, like, success leaves clues. I've always heard that about other people. So there's no way I'm going to take this journey to success. And, you know, I don't want to be the only Tia Coleman where it's like, well, after Tia Coleman is gone and left this earth, then the world just stops. Like, nobody else can fulfill that mission. No, I'm not holding on to what I'm doing and keeping it. I'm not gatekeeping. I'm not going to gatekeep my path to success, my journey to success, because I want somebody to be able to come after me and continue the work. Because I didn't do all of this just to say, hey, 28 years, I made this thing happen. And then now what? Right. I don't want people to be looking like, now what? I want people to be able to come from up under me and like keep the legacy going, like we see in so many other cultures and races.
Exactly. And, you know, and that's like, you know, succession planning, which is one of the things that I don't think we do enough in our community, is like, you know, documenting like, all right, here's what I did to make this successful. Now for the next person who might be like your vice president or your assistant director, let me teach you how to replace me. because once I've taught you how to replace me, now I'm free to go do the next thing that I've been called to do. And so many times we get stuck in only doing that one thing, even to the point of getting burnt out, because we're not willing to let go of some of it and allow someone else to take over. And you don't know like how they can take what was your great idea and make it even greater. So you're still a part of it, but you're allowing somebody else to come in and put like their spin on it. And too often, like, ideas and programs get stale because we don't allow other people to come into the vision and give us new ideas to take it to the next level.
Ooh, Miss Lakeisha, if we had more time, that would be an entire episode right there. Like this, the traditional way of doing things or stale programming, and you know, the older generation being afraid to let younger, fresh faces come in and put our own twist to it. Oh, yeah. God, I could go on and on and on, but I'm not, because we reached our 30-minute mark.
Right. Because I'm like, your program already dead, so what you think I'm going to do, kill it some more?
Exactly. And I'm talking about these women or men in these organizations and big corporate companies, literally. So, and I'm going to say this. So I just recently won an award for the Jacksonville Business Journal, the Women of Influence Award.
Yes, congratulations.
Thank you. And apparently that's like a really big deal. Okay. That's like the Nobel Peace Prize in Jacksonville. Me, I have no clue, child. I just, you know, I was excited. So I showed up and showed out and I had to do an interview. And, you know, one of my affirmations, daily mantras is be bolder, be louder. So when I did my interview, I was very honest. And, you know, typically we go in these spaces and we feel like it's time to, you know, be meek and be humble and not say how we truly feel out of the fear of not being accepted. But I said exactly how I felt. And Jacksonville is slow to progress because it is known in other cities to embrace younger, fresh faces in leadership roles and in CEO positions. And Jacksonville is in fear of that. And we keep it traditional. You know, we stick to the same systems and ways of thinking, and that's why we can't grow. And I mentioned, you know, like, how, you know, we have this way of thinking like it's only one way to do certain things when that's just not true. Like,
right,
y'all, like the older people in the generation and these companies and corporations, like, y'all are not going to be president forever, you know, like, other people how to step up in these roles and lead and thrive in these roles and make a significant impact in these roles, because y'all time is up. Like, we are the now, and like, it's only going to hurt you more than it's going to help you to gatekeep and not teach somebody else like how to step up and do what you're doing.
Exactly. And I think, you know, and that just comes with, you know, recognizing like your mortality, like you're not going to be here forever. So what do you want your legacy to be? And for so many people, their legacy is going to end with them because they didn't bring anyone along to teach like, all right, this is why we do what we do. And I tell people in the church space all the time is like, a lot of your traditions are going to die because you didn't teach anyone else why this tradition was important. So it's not that I want to throw away the tradition, but I don't see the value in it because you never shared that with me. But if you say the reason why we have Women's Day programs is because when the church was initially formed, women were not allowed in the pulpit. So we had Women's Day programs to ensure that women had at least one time during the year to proclaim the word. So now I understand why it's important to have a Women's Day program. But if I think we're just doing it just because we have this program every year, then yeah, I'm going to scrap it because I don't see the importance in it. So we have to look at those things that we do out of tradition and understand why. And now let's make that tradition better and more relevant rather than just holding on to it until it dies or until we die.
Absolutely. Oh, I just wish we could go on and on and on about that because it's just burning in my spirit to keep it going. But we're going to say that for another episode. Yeah. Miss Lakeisha, I am so thankful that you came on today and shared your insight and your gems with me and my audience because, you know, as a growing entrepreneur, as just a woman in general, I needed to hear a lot of what you dropped on us today.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you so much for extending the invitation and for just being open, because like I meet so many young women who are, you know, trying to build their business and trying to become successful, but they don't want to listen to what anybody has to say, and they're not receptive to advice. And I don't think that I know everything, but I've been in this game for almost 20 years. And so I do feel like, you know, I know a little bit about a little bit. And so, you know, there might be some questions that you have that I can say, well, let's figure it out, or let me look that up for you. And I have a better clue of where to go and find the answer than you, who, you know, you just getting started, just like getting your feet wet. So like, look to a mentor to say, hey, I have questions. Like, can you help me figure this out? And then be receptive to somebody saying like, hey, that might not be a good idea, or let's look at doing this a different way. And it's not always that they want to squash your dream, because there are some dream killers, but then there are also some people who really want you to be successful and want to help you find that path. So I appreciate you being receptive to having my voice on your journey.
Well, thank you so much. And because I know that you done blessed so many people today, could you please give them your information on social media, website, so they can keep up with you and contact you in the future?
Most definitely. You guys can find me on all social media platforms at Lakeisha Womack, LakeishaWomack. And from a branding standpoint, I encourage all of you to, one, go to Google Domains, buy your domain name, and go on every social platform and reserve your name. Because you, whether you use TikTok, Instagram, whatever or not, you want to make sure that you reserve your name and your business name, so that when you do decide to use it, it's available.
Absolutely. That was some great advice. Great advice. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for tuning in to another episode of the I Am the Prize podcast. I know you absolutely love this episode, so please leave us a review on the Apple Podcast app, and I'll see you guys again next Monday.